Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Undue Burden Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On March 2, 2016, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Whole Woman's Health v. Hellerstedt. Whole Woman's Health and other Texas abortion providers sued Texas officials seeking declaratory and injunctive relief against a state law requiring that physicians who perform abortions have admitting privileges at a hospital within 30 miles of the location where the abortion is performed, and requiring that abortion facilities satisfy the standards set for ambulatory surgical centers. The district court enjoined enforcement of both requirements, as applied to all women seeking a pre-viability abortion, and as applied to abortion facilities in McAllen and El Paso, but dismissed claims that the law violated equal protection and affected an unlawful delegation. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit affirmed dismissal of the equal protection and unlawful delegation claims, and affirmed but modified the injunction of the ASC and admitting privileges requirements as applied to the McAllen facility. The court vacated the district court's injunction of the admitting privileges requirement as applied to all women seeking a pre-viability abortion, however, and reversed the injunction of the ASC requirement on its face and in the context of medication abortion, as well as the injunction of the admitting privileges and ASC requirements as applied to the El Paso facility. As a result, the Texas law was to remain in effect statewide, except for the ASC requirement as applied to the Whole Woman's Health abortion facility in McAllen, and the admitting privileges requirement as applied to a particular doctor when working at the McAllen facility. The U.S. Supreme Court, however, stayed issuance of the mandate on the Fifth Circuit's judgment, and that stay currently remains in place pending issuance of the written judgment of the Supreme Court. Thus, the district court's original injunctions against the Texas law remain in effect for now. There are two questions before the Supreme Court. One, whether when applying the undue burden standard of Planned Parenthood v. Casey, a court errs by refusing to consider whether and to what extent laws that restrict abortion for the stated purpose of promoting health actually serve the government's interest in promoting health. And two, whether the Fifth Circuit erred in concluding that this standard permits Texas to enforce, in nearly all circumstances, laws that would, according to petitioners, cause a significant reduction in the availability of abortion services while failing to advance the state's interest in promoting health, or any other valid interest. To discuss the case, we have Roger Severino, who is director for the DeVos Center of Religion and Civil Society at the Heritage Foundation. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Severino.
It was a very interesting day. I was lucky enough to have a seat inside the courtroom. It was a tense atmosphere, I would say. There was a lot of protesters outside. They'd been there for a long time. And of course, whenever we touch on the issue of abortion, the emotions tend to run high. A lot of nervous laughter inside the court, quietly though, and it was generally respectful. Now, to cut to the chase, everybody wants to know what's going to happen, what's the end result, and more specifically, what is Justice Kennedy going to do? Unfortunately, it's unclear. He held his cards very close to the vest. He didn't ask that many questions, but I'll get to the questions he did ask, and they were somewhat illuminating. But I think the bottom line is he showed some hesitation in second-guessing the state's interests in furthering the health of women through these regulations. But he's also unclear as to how he would deal with the undue burden standard that he signed on to in his plurality in the Casey decision. So a bit of background on the case itself. This was HB 2 coming out of Texas. It was a bill that had a couple provisions, about four, dealing with the issue of abortion. And interestingly, it's the dog that didn't bark right out of the gate. So the bill had a 20-week ban on abortions with a very limited health exception that would not be as extensive as Doe versus Bolton. That was not challenged and was not brought up in this case. What was challenged was the admission privileges requirement and the ambulatory surgical center requirement. The admissions privileges requirement requires that any person performing an abortion in an abortion clinic must have admitting privileges at a hospital within 30 miles of the clinic. And the state argued that this was in order to further women's health and continuity of care. In case of complications with abortions, you would have access to a hospital and would be able to hand the chart over to the emergency room technicians and doctors, and this would indeed further women's health in case something goes bad. And the state argues that there is a good number of cases where something does, in fact, go bad. The second requirement is the ambulatory surgical center requirement, and these include standards for operating the facility that matches other outpatient invasive surgeries. So it requires cleanliness standards, safety standards, adequate staffing, a licensed nurse, safe pathology and medical laboratory services, fire prevention and safety, physical plant requirements, so the width of hallways, for example, would allow space for a gurney to pass through. And these are the requirements that a lot of other facilities follow, including abortion facilities. And the other dog that didn't bark is interesting is that Planned Parenthood itself did not sue against HB2. And it may be in part because Planned Parenthood does actually comply. A lot of the facilities comply with the ASC requirements and the admission privilege requirements. So it's very interesting that the largest abortion provider in America did not actually sue under this law. So that was the baseline structure of the statute at issue. The procedural history is slightly muddled. So the admitting privileges question was litigated, that was through the district court, but was not preserved on a second go-around in a second litigation. And this was a facial challenge. So there's an issue right out of the gate on res judicata terms, whether or not that was properly preserved, whether the admission privileges question was should have been raised in the second portion, or was there a basis for doing so. And at this point, Kennedy jumped in and said, well, what is the new evidence you have? She said, what is this key new evidence that would justify reviving the admission privileges issue when it was already decided the first time around? The facial challenge was dismissed by the Fifth Circuit. And they said, well, now we know that clinics have actually been closing, and before it was a pre-enforcement challenge, and now we have actual evidence. And Kennedy said, well, why didn't you just ask for supplemental briefing? So it was interesting that right at the beginning, Kennedy was a bit skeptical as to the res judicata claim. Now, the other claim as to the ambulatory surgical centers was raised later, and then the question was one of ripeness. Was this should this claim have been brought? When it was brought, could it have been brought earlier in the first go-around? There was a little bit more mixed, a bit more of a back and forth, and Justice Kennedy again chimed in and said that would we really want to require states to promulgate regulations before you could do a ripeness claim when the statute itself was pretty clear as to what the regulations were. And I mentioned what those regulations were for ambulatory surgical centers. So Justice Kennedy challenged the petitioner for waiting to bring this claim and not bring it up the first time around. And I'm not sure she had the best answers, but there is a question as to if this really is going to be an issue that is precluded under res judicata or lack of ripeness or waiver for not bringing it up when they could have, then why did the court grant cert? I don't know how it's going to shake out, but it is interesting to know that a significant amount of time of the argument from Todi, she represented the petitioners, focused on this issue of res judicata and ripeness to the point where Ginsburg said, hey, are you going to have any time to argue the merits? And then the Chief Justice said, yes, we'll give you some extra time to argue the merits of the case. So I guess you could say there's an avenue, if Justice Kennedy or other justices are so inclined, to say that, well, maybe this is not the best vehicle for deciding a very big issue on abortion. I think it's most vulnerable on the admitting privileges issue. And if they keep one issue, it may be they'll keep the ASC, the ambulatory surgical center issue, live. There was a lot of talk on this issue. And then once you turned to the issue of the merits, you had the other justices jump in a bit more. And on this point, a lot of the issues focused on capacity, travel time, and the evidence, the state of the evidence. So on the issue of capacity, now what I mean by that is, what happens if abortion clinics do in fact close because of these regulations and they're not up to snuff, they can't or don't want to pay for the retrofits required to do the ambulatory surgical center standards, or if they don't have doctors that have admitting privileges and they don't want to go through the process of doing it, what if abortion clinics start closing? there was tremendous back and forth with all counsel as to what the facts are. Are abortion clinics closing because of this law or not? And I think one takeaway from this is that that question was very difficult to answer given the state of the factual record. There simply wasn't that much evidence at trial that would give you very firm numbers, to the point where Alito was saying, well, in this similar litigation in Louisiana, they had all sorts of record evidence. For example, they actually had record evidence of the number of abortions performed by each abortion clinic that could be affected by this. Texas, in this case, there was none of that evidence. So Alito's point, which he hammered time and again, was, aren't we just speculating as to whether or not these regulations are causing clinic closures? Which Toti responded by saying, well, we know that clinics have actually closed. There have been, she said, 50% have closed since the law has come into effect. And she says the timing of when they closed is the key evidence that gives you that baseline to decide that the regulations were the cause of it. Alito and the chief would retort and push back heavily, saying, well, isn't that really speculation? Wasn't it the Dixit of their expert at trial? And he himself didn't opine as to the fact as to what caused the abortion clinics to close. But this is a crucial issue because Justice Kennedy spoke about the capacity issue. When he spoke up on it, he wondered out loud whether or not the case could be remanded, whether it was appropriate to remand the case to deal with the capacity question, meaning the clinics that stay in existence, the ambulatory surgical centers, many of which are Planned Parenthood, and the new clinics that have come online since then, there are 50% more ASCs now, 9, than there was before the litigation, which was 6. So Kennedy was asking, well, would it be proper to remand under these circumstances, quote, for further findings on clinic capacity? And he mentioned that a new clinic came online, and these are mega clinics. So in many ways, you could argue that Planned Parenthood is sweeping up much of the any clinic, small clinics that close down. Those women seeking abortions are now going to these mega clinics run by Planned Parenthood, which may explain why Planned Parenthood didn't sue. I mean, Planned Parenthood is actually, in a way, growing and getting more business because of it, of these regulations. So Kennedy was asking, is it possible to just remand to figure out this capacity question? And he also brought up a similar point, and he asked, and this was where it was most striking in his mannerisms. He grabbed his head, looked up, almost exasperated, and said, do you think the district courts have discretion, using their equitable powers, to have stayed the requirement for 2.5 or 3 years to see if the capacity problem could be cured? And could a district judge do that? And he was just wondering out loud. And it seems to me that what he was getting at was that if they were to strike down these regulations right out of the gate, it would be based on a supposition about what would happen to the number of abortions throughout the state when it's a dynamic process. When the regulations happened, you have new clinics adapt and adopt the new standards, and some of them fall away. And what the net result of that is, Kennedy was saying, I don't know. I suppose that's what he was saying. What is the net result? How can we know? And could the district court have just said, we'll put in a waiting period to see how many clinics modify their standards to come into effect? Now, I don't know what the legality of that would be if a district court could issue such equitable relief. And in fact, this question was asked of Solicitor General Verrilli, and Verrilli's response was, I haven't thought of it, frankly, and I would be loath to hazard a guess as to whether or not a court could do such a thing. So he didn't really answer the question. But it was interesting that it does illuminate what was on Justice Kennedy's mind at the time on this capacity question. So it'll probably be very key going forward when he starts working on opinion writing with his colleagues. And to that point, Alito responded that those back and forth actually with Breyer and Alito. Breyer said, well, the number of these clinics, these mega clinics, they perform 2,000 abortions on average. So there's, you know, 8 or 9, so that's 18,000, et cetera, when there are 70,000 abortions performed a year in Texas. And Justice Alito said, well, in fact, actually the chief said, if you were able to supplement the record, state of Texas, what would you put? And then Solicitor General Keller said, well, we would say that some of these clinics perform 9,000 abortions a year. So 9,000 times 10 is 90,000. So each side argued, what is the actual effect and impact on the number of abortions available to women based on what happens with the clinic? So it'll be interesting to see if it's going to take a static view, which is what petitioners say. If you close down X number of clinics the minute this statute goes into effect, that's how it impacts women. Or is it going to be a dynamic, recursive view where, sure, this has an effect on regulations. That's what regulations do. But the abortion industry will adapt and adjust. It's a free market system. You could change your practices, and perhaps you need time to let it sort out, which is what Justice Kennedy may have been hinting at. The other issue was on travel. How far would women be required to travel to get an abortion if, in fact, these abortion clinics are closing because of these regulations, which, of course, it is hotly disputed as to what the cause of any abortion clinics closing was and is. And this is where the liberal justices really started to get active and peppering Solicitor General Keller on the question. And I guess that's where you would see most of the emotion come out from Sotomayor and Ginsburg a bit. They were almost, it seemed as if they were almost insulted that the state was doing these regulations when women would have to travel a farther distance. To which Keller responded that, well, 90% of women, it's in the same boat, 150 miles or less, and only 10% would have to travel beyond that. And under Planned Parenthood versus Casey, that does not constitute a large fraction of the cases that would have to travel farther. An interesting point was as to who would count or not. The state said there's a clinic in New Mexico just over the border, 1 mile over the border, and that should be actually considered as to whether or not there's access. And if that clinic is not considered, then the women in the western part of the state would have to travel a farther distance. To which Ginsburg immediately jumped in and said, well, are you saying that these women should be able to get this substandard care at an abortion clinic just across the state when Texas says this is important, that women need to have very good facilities and very good access to health care? Unfortunately, there was too much back and forth among the justices to get a very full answer from Keller, but he did say that the undue burden test looks at the facts on the ground, which is in fact what the petitioners were arguing as well from their side. You look at the facts on the ground, and if the facts on the ground say women are currently getting abortions a mile away, if there's an absence of a clinic in that area, you would presume they will continue to get abortions a mile away. And you look at it that way, and that would not constitute an undue burden, because in fact Casey itself allowed 150-mile travel time and a 24-hour waiting period, so long as it doesn't impose a substantial obstacle, which is what Casey said. And it comes to the point as to what did Casey say? And it'll all turn on Kennedy's view of it. The two competing views are that from the state of Texas side is that it's really two tests. There's the rational basis test, that whether or not the abortion regulation has a valid purpose, if it has an incidental effect of making abortion more difficult or more expensive, then that's not enough to invalidate, and that's practically quoting Casey verbatim. And the other side of the test is whether or not there's a purpose or effect that imposes a substantial obstacle in front of a woman seeking an abortion. So there's those two sides, and the Chief Justice very, very clear in saying that is the test. It's two-part. So long as you have a medical justification that the state finds reasonable, that's the state's view, the state's choice, then the question simply becomes, what is the actual practical effect? If there's not a large practical effect that limits abortion availability, then it's perfectly valid. Now, the petitioners argued that it's more than that, that you actually have to look at the intent and purpose of the law and weigh it against the level of the obstacle and the burden. So it's sort of a balancing test, combines both of them. And Chief Justice Roberts tried to pin Toti and saying, well, didn't you waive the argument that this is not a rational law? And in fact, she conceded that, yes, they did not preserve that issue. And they would effectively be conceding that it was a rational regulation. She contested it. She says, no, we're not arguing that, because essentially we get a second bite at the apple. Under the undue burden test, under the effect prong, you get to balance the state interest with the level of burden. And there again, you could question whether or not it was rational. On this point, the liberal justices were very active, saying, how could you have a rational, is this really about health, when in fact there's all sorts of other procedures that are not required to do ASC standards? To which Keller responded, well, it's within the discretion of the state, and abortion is different, and the course precedents like Exomopolis, which allowed certain regulations on abortion but didn't require those of brain surgery. He mentioned that. You know, if you allow brain surgery unregulated and you say that's okay, and you could still regulate abortion specially, then we could do it here. But he'll still attack very heavily on the fit question. Does the stated justification fit very closely to the actual effect when there's other procedures that aren't required? There was significant back and forth on that, but the interesting point, I think, came from Breyer as to whether or not this showed an invalid purpose. So I would say Ginsburg and Sotomayor, and to a lesser degree, Kagan, but she also did, were trying to show that this was a sham, that Texas was simply trying to limit the number of abortions, and this really had nothing to do with health, and it's pretextual. Justice Breyer, he came out and said, you know, I'm not going to question the intent of the state and what they're trying to do here. I'm going to presume that the intent in regulating abortion clinics was a legitimate desire to further women's health. So I presume that under that, with that statement, you're not going to get an opinion that's going to say this was some sort of sham. So the purpose prong of Casey, I don't think it's going to come into play if Breyer's statement is to be credited, that this isn't about limiting abortions, and that's not what the purpose is from the state's point of view, and it should be credited, and it's legitimate. The only question, of course, from Breyer's view is this the way to do it? Is this really the way to further the state's interest in health, and whether or not it's excessive? And Justice Kagan on that point said, well, should we create standards that have hospital-level Cadillac standards, essentially, like Massachusetts General, and apply that to abortion clinics? So is that something that we should do or not, and can we do it? And that's a valid question, and how many regulations is too much? And to which Keller responded, you look at it in two parts. First, yes, you should regulate abortion to improve women's health. And then a separate question is, does that actually prevent women, a large fraction of the cases, from getting abortions? Kennedy did not really show his hands on that question, but he on the undue burden test, he did say that he's open to the possibility of going either way, that it could either be a two-part test, like the state of Texas would want, or there could be a balancing test. I mean, he actually used the word, you know, isn't it weighed, the state's interest weighed against the burdens that result. So we don't know what Kennedy is going to say about his own test. He did not give intimation as to which way it would go, but he said he's open to the possibility that undue burden is weighed against the state's interest, which of course would help the petitioners and go against Texas. But even then, it's unclear as to whether Justice Kennedy will say, is this enough, even if we change the test, is it enough to say that we have enough evidence that Texas has gone over the line, or is it just better to remand?
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.